Hi, I'm Carlos Sainz, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamin, my co-host. This is podcast number 674, March 23rd, 2015. Nasser?
Thank you, sir, and I say greetings and Ferdinandum regards. Game on, but Guido's gone, and Lotus does another great signing in Ederle Fong.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando still being evaluated by Los Doctores. LCH hanging around La Ferrari. Christian Horner seems to be crying a lot. And don't forget, the Germans always come out blazing, but usually fizzle after 4 years. And we bid farewell to Richard Irish. Stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid, and we have a report from JB on the forum on the Australian Grand Prix experience. And we do have a wee few calendars left in the merchandise page. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. How is life in Cali for you?
Cali is a superior state to all other states, therefore it is wonderful.
I agree on that. Now, I hear from a Tweety Bird that you are not happy with the opening race of the season.
I mean, I found it interesting. I mean, we have so few cars starting Grand Prix now. I mean, I used to like 26 cars starting a race. I thought that was great. 24 is good. 22 is stinko. 20 is, it's getting smelly. 18, I mean, when we're down to 15, I think that's the first time that we were down to 15 since 1963. And do you know what I was wearing in 1963?
Nothing.
Exactly. Short pants, and I had a little peach fuzz on my face.
And where were you in 63? Sevilla, España, or Rouen, Francia?
I was in France. But it was a little disappointing. But, I mean, we knew the Hondas were going to be stinko. Now Renault has been outclassed by Ferrari because Ferrari is definitely showing some pace and Kimi Raikkonen might have to actually wake up. In the end, I mean, come on. Let's just say it. The Germans, led by an Austrian, are pulling off the big blitzkrieg and it's working. I mean, they're going to dominate this entire season because, believe it or not, they didn't even show their true pace. That was a default pace that we saw in Australia. Don't let me get everybody down. What did you think of this glorious event? I mean, what was good about Australia is the students, the alumni of the F1 Weekly Familia did perform quite outstandingly.
Yes, we got great reports and great photographs. And, you know, I mean, not every Grand Prix is going to be like Dijon-Prenois 1979 or Monza 71. I'm just happy the season has started. Very happy with the result. I enjoyed some dicing. Cousin did very well. And it was just, you know, like you said, Honda was stinko. Well, they did out-qualify the Mainers, but then the Mainers were not, you know, racing.
But that was, for me, that was the most hilarious thing. The Mainers forgot to check if the hard drive had any data in it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, absolutely amazing. They get to Australia and realize that the software has been wiped clean. They can't even start the motor.
Wow. Just goes to show how high-tech Formula One has become.
Exactly.
And we don't need this, you know, too much technology. We want simple racing, and that's what I enjoy most.
I agree. I mean, if you can't start the car with your iPhone, I mean, it's over. You pack up and go home.
Yes.
But there was some good stuff. And, of course, I think the press was all over because we already knew Fernando wasn't there. So the press really needed something to grab onto that they could chew on. And, of course, your buddy, Vandegaarde, was interesting, to say the least. I'm a little disappointed with the guy, but it is what it is.
Well, you know, this is a case of Monisha, law offices of Monisha and Monisha. And this was really something that should have been resolved long before the season opener. And what amazes me, Clark, is that Miss Monisha Carlton-Bone is a lady with very impressive educational and professional credentials. She came to Sabre, if I remember reading correctly, from the Fritz Kaiser group of companies, and she was their legal advisor, and the group was an early investor in Sabre Racing Team. And I don't see a lot of pictures of Sabre cars, but I think their name is still on the car. And you don't have to be a law graduate from Long Island to figure out that if you employ a person for 20 hours or 40 hours, you cannot pay him for 5 hours less or 7 hours less and hope that he will simply go away. I mean, what do you think?
No, I think you're right. I mean, they were trying to pull the fast one. They were trying to pull an F1 weekly with the zeros. And sometimes we're happy with zeros, but Vandegaarde was looking at those zeros and was thinking, you know what? There's a big digit missing.
Yes, and you know, Guido had won his case in a Swiss court, and that should have raised all sorts of red flags and cautions. And the reports are not yet confirmed, but looks like Sauber will pay him 15 million euros to not drive for them. So without being a world champion or even winning a race, he has reached the high standard set by Kimi Raikkonen when Luca paid him 20 million to race in rally cars in NASCAR. True.
Yeah, stunning. Absolutely yeah. Stunning. I mean, especially when you're already struggling.
Yeah.
For funds and you make a big mistake like this. Shame on Monisha and Monisha.
Yeah. And in the final analysis, look like they are paying off Guido with sponsorship received from Marcus Ericsson because it's reported to be around 15 million. And I have heard a rumor or to the press that Cousin brought even more. So, and you know, the funniest part for me was to see Guido Vandegaarde wearing a Marcus Ericsson suit in Melbourne. That was beautiful.
Absolutely unbelievable. You know what? You know, I like Melbourne. Melbourne is usually a great Grand Prix. We've had killer Grand Prix here. But for me, this one had some issues. This one, it was almost maybe the karma wasn't there or something.
No, I mean, you know, it was not Melbourne's fault. I mean,
I know.
In racing, and you know, it's the people, so they're going to screw up. They're going to make mistakes. But I, to be honest with you, I enjoyed the race very much. And for me, the best part is the season is on now. No more waiting for 3 months.
I know. But see, you're the calm intellectual of the pair. I am the erratic, crazy French-American, never happy with anything.
Are you calling yourself the Dick Trickle of podcasting?
Absolutely.
I'm disappointed, Clark. I thought it was much better than that.
Well, it is what it is, you know. After a while, you get old, you get, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
It's all coming to an end.
You know, it's the thing is, you know, we're going to have some good races, and I'm hearing reports that it might rain in Malaysia. And Malaysia is very interesting. If I remember correctly, this is the place where Nando had his first pole and Kimi in the same race had his first win. So, well, they won't be repeating those feats now this year. But let's see what happens this weekend.
Yes, and don't forget, Kimi had his first Haagen-Dazs in Malaysia.
Absolutely.
I know you're dying to talk about LCH. LCH has basically replaced Kimi Raikkonen in your heart.
Well, you know, well, Kimi Raikkonen of McLaren days.
Of course, yes, indeed.
Racing talent. But, you know, part of the reason I'm so happy is that I like the result. I want the best driver to win, whether it be LCH or Nico Rosberg or Sebastian Vettel. So it was very good to see LCH, you know, come out swinging. You know, pole, fastest lap, race win. This is his win number 34, and he could well be sitting on 40-plus Grand Prix wins before the season is over, and that's very, very impressive.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, not only that, there's a very good chance that this year's Formula One car, the Mercedes, could suit LCH even better than last year's.
Yes, and if his teammate had new motivation after finishing second in the championship last year, because that's what he was quoted as saying, I think he needs to text Rubinho and Gerhard Berger what to do when your teammate takes his racing very seriously and drives very fast on race day.
I don't know. I think, who knows? All I know is it's just going to be LCH and Nico. We'll have a couple of token Ferrari results, maybe a Williams here and a Williams there. But that's pretty much it. I don't see anything happening this season that's going to be like a two or three seasons ago when we had 13 different winners. Everybody was happy. We were excited. This is going to be, once again, a Mercedes stronghold led by an Austrian, and we know what that usually results in, Nasser.
Yes, complete domination. And, you know, they even go to Russia so they can he can lead them up. It's just a good thing the Russian Grand Prix is not in Leningrad or Stalingrad.
No, but usually in Russia is where the Germans start getting in trouble.
That's very true.
No, I mean, it was a great race. I was happy to see Sebastian Vettel actually get on a podium for Ferrari, because with all the turmoil and the changes, Ferrari needed something.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. You know, one thing that was interesting that, you know, a lot of times in testing, there is one car or one team that's doing very well, and you know they're showboating. But this time it has turned out that Ferrari was not horsing around, and Sauber was serious, and obviously Mercedes was in preseason and in race on a different planet altogether.
What we need now is some tire wars so Ferrari can complain about Mercedes on Michelins or something. You know, we need something exciting.
Yes. Well, I think it's going to be provided by race day. That, you know, like Kimi Raikkonen has problem with his tires. Hey, it can something like this can hit LCH or Nico Rosberg. So the Apple cart will be moved around or shifted sooner or later.
It will, but it's going to take, it usually takes 4 years, Nasser, as history has told me. So we'll see what happens. To be honest with you, I was glad Renault came out because I thought it was a fantastic psychological coup to tell their teams, Red Bull and Toro Rosso, this engine will not win nothing. It's going to take another 2 years. Just relax. Take a load off. Just be cool, man.
Yes, who knows? Carlos Sainz might give them a win. So are you going to talk about the qualifying or just going to jump into the race day?
Qualifying, wow. I mean, it was okay. You can talk about qualifying. I mean, for me, it's pretty much a Mercedes domination. So
no, but, you know, behind them, best of the rest, there was some great performances. Carlos Sainz, fantastic qualifying.
No doubt. And I was so happy because I sort of had an inkling that Carlos Sainz was going to be a little more machismo than Max Verstappen.
Yeah, but, you know, both are very good. And Carlos Sainz has several years of car racing experience. But if you read the web, different websites, you know, everybody's talking about great performance by Carlos Sainz Jr., Max Verstappen, Felipe Nasser. So this was quite a good race. I mean, just don't let the numbers fool you.
Well, no, not only that, but the numbers do fool you. If we had a full entire grid, we wouldn't have numbers like this. What's so fantastic about having, you know, 15 cars start the race, and then we were down to 12 pretty quickly, and of course, your boy, Pastor Maldonado, I love that man. I mean, even on a small grid like this, he gets taken out. It's hilarious.
Yeah, but you know, Pastor Cachado, he made history in Albert Park because it was for the first time in his race-winning Formula One career he crashed out. And amazing but true, it was not his fault.
Come on. There's no such thing. If his name is on it, it's his fault. It's never his fault. It's always his fault.
He's innocent till he crashes.
I understand. But you have to admit, the rookies really had a lot of luck on their side because of the low numbers in the race itself. I mean, let me put it this way. I mean, towards the end of the race, it was hard to believe with only 11 cars running and a McLaren couldn't get in the points. I mean, that was good. Those were good numbers. 11 cars running and a McLaren can't get in the points.
Yeah, but they finished the race, though.
I know. No, no, no. I know that, but I'm not talking in terms of Hondas. I'm talking the word McLaren, you know, that exudes championships. And when you have 11 cars and a McLaren can't get in the points, that says something. I mean, this was a very bizarre race.
Yeah, but, you know, every year we have one or two crazy races, one or two races that are hit by rain. So it evens out, you know.
I know, but I think this is going to be a crazy year. Let's just put it this way. Renault has already used two of their engines, and we're only allowed four for the season.
Yeah, some of these rules, you know, that's...
Well, yeah, but the rules are the rules. So we're going to see people maybe qualify eighth or ninth and get a 10-grid penalty because of these rules. So we're going to have an awkward season where the, you know, people are going to be they're going to feel like they've been burned. The motivation will be lacking.
Okay, let's talk about LCH's teammate, Nico Rosberg. Do you think this cat has a chance to beat Lewis Hamilton this year to the championship?
Nope.
No chance, huh?
Mm-mm. When the safety car pulled in, did you see the lead LCH had in front of Nico?
Yes.
That will be repeated time and time again. Nico Rosberg should have taken this Grand Prix by the balls, and he didn't, and he should have.
Yes.
Because LCH had a DNF last year, and Nico Rosberg couldn't win the championship. So when LCH wins the Grand Prix, Nico's in a heap of trouble.
You know what was impressive about LCH last year? Twice he went down 25 points or more down on Nico. And at one time I thought this is over now because the cars were just one and two all the time. But, you know, Nico may have good pedigree. I know he's a smart young man who speaks several languages. But the only language which he cannot master with all the help from Rosetta Stone is the language of beating LCH on the track on race day. And I just cannot see this guy beating Lewis in the championship in the same team. You know, other things remaining the same. Lewis can crash three races in a row on his own, which I'm surprised he didn't do last year. I think the die is set in LCH's. The mold has been made for Hamilton to win another race championship.
Yes, and well, the biggest problem is last year was the first year of this V6 turbo hybrid engine package. This year, Mercedes is going to be exceptionally reliable. It's not going to be like last year. LCH, he's going to run with this one. It's going to be historic. It's going to be dominant. You know, he's going to be getting hair implants.
Yeah, well, you know, if LCH wins another championship, let me just tell you something. Nico Rosberg will not be a number one driver at any team but Mercedes if they keep him that long.
They will. I mean, it's a good team. I mean, Nico's German. I don't know. Who's going to replace Nico? There's no reason to replace him. He always, as long as you come in second and get maximum points, he's doing his job.
Yeah, but who knows? You know, Mercedes in a few years might take Max Verstappen or some young, another, you know, gung-ho driver come. Hey, I got an answer for you. Equally good, actually better looking than Nico Rosberg, Carmen Jordan.
She would be perfect. She would be perfect. Yeah. No, I I'm not going to say anything like a Max Verstappen or a Carlos Sainz, because right now they've only raced once, and they're powered by Renault. So those guys could look terrible all season long if Renault doesn't get their act together.
No, I just have a suspicion that what's going to happen in one of these races, Clark, we're going to have a race in the rain, and some people will just stand out. And two of them, I already know who they are, Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel. I would love to see some guy make a statement by his performance, just like Sebastian Vettel did with Toro Rosso at Monza.
We'll see what happens, but yeah.
You know, one guy who has really not impressed me, even in his McLaren days with his rain driving, you know, expertise, is Kimi Raikkonen.
Kimi Raikkonen is just on automatic pilot these days.
No, but even when he was with McLaren, I do not recall a race. Actually, I tell you, in the 2007, or was it 2008, Japanese Grand Prix, when, I think it was 2008, when, no, it could be 2007. But anyway, Heikki Kovalainen, I think he was in the Renault. And late in the race, he had a huge battle for a few corners with Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen passed him, and then going on the outside, I think Kovalainen passed him by. So, Kimi, for some reason, with all his fantastic, you know, racing talent from the McLaren days, he has not really surprised me in his wet weather driving.
I agree with you. Well, all I know is, for me, the season really doesn't start until Fernando is in the car.
In a car that's not 5 seconds slower?
Any car. You know what? I liked Fernando when he was in a Minardi. So please, let's just pretend that it's a Minardi.
Yes.
Okay. But Felipe Nasr was impressive because the Sauber looks good.
Yeah, it was looking very good in preseason testing. And I really thought that was some, you know, like as Bob Warshaw used to say, come on, girls, time to show your legs. Mm. I thought they were just making up to look good, you know, hurting for sponsorship, this and that. And this has been done over the years by several teams. But looks like the pace is there. I mean, I got to tell you, like I said, you got to read the different website, how much kudos people like Felipe Nasr, Carlos Sainz, even Max Verstappen are getting for doing the job they did.
Well, they are getting a lot of kudos. Let's just see how consistent this continues.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Felipe Anas's fifth place, and this has been played a lot, this is the best ever finish in Grand Prix racing among Brazilian drivers on their debut. And it's really impressive when you consider before Rubinho and Felipe Massa, a two-time world champion Emerson Fittipaldi, three-time world champion Nelson Piquet, and the legend that was Ayrton Senna, all came from Brazil, 66.
Very exciting. I mean, I was stunned. When the F1 Weekly children do well, Papa is a happy man.
There you go. We're more like grandpapas now.
Exactly.
What about Daniel Ricciardo?
Nothing to mention. He had so many problems with the Renault. I don't want to talk about it.
No, it was amazing. You know, he had hydraulic problem in free practice one, engine failure in free practice two, and brake by wire issues in free practice three. And despite all this, he qualified seventh and kept smiling just like Dan Gurney all the time.
And the biggest problem is they're having huge software issues, the drivability of the car. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, let's put it this way. Over at Mercedes, they probably have Microsoft, you know, the best of the best in operating system. Renault, for some reason, chose Atari.
So are they planning on playing some games?
I don't know. You know, but Atari can only handle one Pong at a time.
There you go.
So, I don't know. It's very sad for me. I'm suffering deep down in my gut.
Now, you know, you mentioned about Sebastian Vettel earlier. I mean, the guy looks very well settled at Ferrari. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes. I mean, well, you know, a lot of these people raced in Italy. Everybody loves Ferrari.
Of course.
Like he said, he admitted, he's been hanging around there since 2008. When you become world champion, you don't go out and buy a Volkswagen Golf. There's pretty much only one car you go out and buy.
Very true.
It's very true. And when you buy a Ferrari and you are the Ferrari cliente, you go to the factory. You talk to the people. You fondle the leather, which was what Lewis Hamilton was doing a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you know, when they catch you fondling, all of a sudden, they're giving you a little massage. They're showing you Schumacher's championship-winning cars, and it gets to you inside.
You know, the main question for me is, after this season for sure, will Sebastian get his fifth title before Nando gets his third? And it's hard to believe, as much as you like and as much as I appreciate the driver in Nando, hard to believe it was a decade ago that Fernando won his second and last championship.
And with Mercedes, this domination can last for a while.
Can you imagine what his chances would be had he gone to Mercedes?
Yeah, but all I know is when the pendulum is swinging, you got to be at the right place at the right time in Formula One.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. I mean, you have to be very good, but I just wonder how many races Lewis would have won if he was driving for Toro Rosso last 3-4 years. You know what I'm saying?
And trust me, Sebastian Vettel is so happy he was at Red Bull when Red Bull was dominating, because all of a sudden, he could be at Ferrari for a number of years without any championships.
Yeah, something will happen. I mean, nothing is forever. I mean, we saw the McLaren-Honda domination come to an end. We've seen Renault domination, Ferrari domination. Things change sooner or later, you know.
Oh, they will change. It'll be fun to watch. I think it's going to be just dandy. But in the meantime, we have to live today, now.
Yes. And there was some interesting news about Marcus Ericsson. You know, this kid, we've been interviewing him for many years. And both him and Felipe are at the same team. So hopefully I will be able to meet them at one of the races. This was the first time since Stefan Johansson's third place finish in the 1989 Portuguese Grand Prix that a Swedish driver scored points in Formula One. And 1989 Portuguese Grand Prix was the race in which Senna crashed into the Ferrari of Il Leone, who had already been black flagged, I think, for reversing in the pits. But, you know, Mansell kept racing and so did Senna, and that was the nature of these two men. Do you remember that race, sir?
Yes, sir. Exciting. I'm really happy for Marcus Ericsson because for a long time I didn't think he was going to make it. So he's a lucky guy. He did well, and I'm happy for him. Just like the two rookies over at Toro Rosso, I was happy for them as well. Yeah. That was what everybody was watching. That's what the camera was watching, because really the two front Mercedes weren't really giving any of us a lot of excitement during the Grand Prix.
And Mr. Bottas was crying achy breaky back after qualifying, And since he could not get out of the car in time allotted, I think it was on Sunday morning, they did this test. He was not there to drive. And the Finn, the new flying Finn, he's a very good talent. You know, many years ago when he was in Formula Renault, he barely beat Daniel Ricciardo in the Formula Renault Euro Cup Championship. So it's good to see both of them do well. And so his season is going to start in round two, hopefully just like Nando and Malassi this coming weekend.
I think Fernando was right in not going to Australia. I mean, talk to Kevin Magnussen.
And you know, this thing about Christian Horner and blaming Renault for all their issues and problems. Regarding Daniel Kvyat, Horner was quoted as saying, it may have to do something with the oscillations we have seen from the engine. And this Red Bull Renault four-year honeymoon is now over for sure. And this reminds me of a Neil Diamond song, which I know is one of your favorites. Love on the Rocks, Ain't No Surprise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is classic. When you're winning your lovers,
you know,
you're holding hands.
And frankly speaking, you probably must have caught on this. I do not recall a lot of praises sung for Renault when Red Bull was winning, do you?
No.
But, you know, one thing as a point of reference, not too long ago, some of us will remember when the Red Baron could not run with drivers on Michelin tires. His only comment, which he said a few times, was about his tire supplier, Bridgestone, was, we win together, we lose together. And right now, rumors are flying that Red Bull is giving them wings to the rumors that they may build their own engine. Who knows if that will happen? Or Toro Rosso may be sold to Renault. And even the mothership Red Bull may be sold if Dietrich Mateschitz gets caught up with not winning. So I have a feeling that they're going to unload Toro Rosso. There are already reports that Renault wants to buy a team. And let's see what happens. Maybe you have an inside line here.
I think Toro Rosso will buy, Renault will buy Toro Rosso because Renault wants to stay in F1. It's a very good marketing tool for them globally. And I don't know what Red Bull is going to do. I don't think Red Bull wants to get into the engine building game. Let me put it this way. 20 years ago, sure, these engines were simple. Now it's a completely different bag. And if you look at the pie charts, the Mercedes budget is the biggest in Formula One. And I'm talking huge. Money talks. Money brings you great results. I know it didn't happen at Toyota, but that's a different story for a different podcast. Mercedes has done a fine job. They threw everything at this problem, and they came up with the right solution. Their motor's rocking, and Renault's. It's gonna. They admit it. It's gonna take 2 years to even get close to this.
And Mercedes, you know, had a lot of. Remember at how many chiefs they had at their factory in Brackley. All sorts of big names were there.
Everybody was there. And they stole a lot of good talent from other companies, including Renault and Ferrari. Oh, so yeah. It is what it is. This is how it works in Formula One.
Yeah, but you know, it's other team. Nobody is stopping other teams from hiring people and making things happen.
I completely agree. And they usually do this when they're reshuffling, just like Williams did hiring some quality people when they reshuffled their entire technical staff.
Yeah, but I'm convinced that apart from Mercedes, two companies that will win sooner or later is Renault, because, you know, they love motor racing there and they know what they're doing, and Honda. They're also very rich in technology, and it's just a matter of time of putting the whole package together.
I completely agree. I think Honda will win by next year. We'll see what happens, but my laughs are over at Lotus F1. They've got the Mercedes package and both cars out at the beginning of the race. Crashado, obviously, doing what he does best.
And you know, this news that came in a day or two ago that they have now signed as a development driver, this Chinese driver, Adderley Fong.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on there?
Whatever. I think it's a beautiful thing.
I think these are all people, you know, 2 million here, 3 million there. It adds up.
It does. You know, if I could get some paid podcasters to come on the show, I'd be doing it too. What can you do?
But I have to say, you were talking about the small number of cars. Apart from the six-car U.S. Grand Prix in 2005 at Indianapolis, which you and I were lucky enough to be at present, 15 cars starting the 2015 Australian Grand Prix was the smallest grid since the 1982 San Marino Grand Prix at Imola, made famous or infamous based on what side of the garage you are, by Didier Pironi winning over Gilles Villeneuve. So, you know, and that race also was a four-car, four-tire wars going on, you know, this and that. We've always had issues in motor racing, as in life.
And now, you know what? I am very disappointed with Christian Horner. I think he's a whiner. When you're winning, you have to also know how to lose in style. And I'm very disappointed with him crying, whimpering. But he did have a couple of good points. And it's not just Red Bull. I mean, I remember when Braun GP came out with the blown diffusers, the rear diffusers. I mean, and then Red Bull with the flexi wings. I mean, they were scrutinized. And don't forget, other teams were complaining. Ferrari was complaining about Red Bull every race. They were scrutinized.
Yeah,
so
but you know, this call for equalization, what is this, IRL of 1997?
No, but this is very typical. This happens a lot at Le Mans when somebody is dominating too much, so they change the rules to mix it up and make it more competitive. We call it a competition caution.
Yeah, and you know, talking about Christian Horner complaining and bitching and moaning, I like what Toto Wolff had to howl at people like him.
Oh, my favorite Austrian.
Yeah, this is what he said, you know, and I quote, "If you come into Formula One, try to beat each other and perform at the highest level, and then you need equalization after the first race, you cry out after the first race, I think just get your freaking head down, work hard, and try to sort it out. There is this wall in Jerusalem," he continued, "that you can stand in front and complain. Maybe these guys should go there." End of quote. And like you said before, an Austrian working for a German organization, you know, things are getting serious now.
Well, the biggest thing I don't like is, you know, okay, I understand the Austrian leading this organization, but the Jerusalem slam was a little too far.
I was very surprised that the guy working for Mercedes, especially for Mercedes, making a comment like that.
Yes, exactly, because Mercedes was doing a lot of bad things during the war.
Well, but as Bernie would say, they got things done, you know.
Oh, they're Germans. I mean, they're well-organized, you know, machine. There's no doubt.
I mean, just look at how Michael Schumacher operated. Sebastian Vettel operates pretty much the same way.
Yes. No. I completely agree. So this is all very interesting, and I like Toto Wolff coming out talking like this. But the best part is Toto Wolff also knows, just like Sebastian Vettel knew on that last race at Red Bull when he won his fourth world championship, he knew that this wasn't going to be forever. So Toto Wolff knows this is not going to be forever. No. He knows history. So I like these word games. I think it's fun. I want people to start duking it out. It's going to be great. And we'll see. I'm just hoping Honda can step up to the plate, put in a good budget together, and give Fernando a world championship winning car.
You know what amazes me about this Honda project right now? They basically had, from the time they announced this program, they basically had 2 years of development time, and there were so many problems being faced by so many people, and all this news came out, how the Mercedes has put the turbo and the, you know, the all the things that go with turbo and had spread the thing, and that's why the engine is heating less, so they are more efficient. I mean, there was such information available on the web. And for a company to have such a tremendous pedigree and success, especially with the team they have gone with, McLaren, to have this kind of problem being 4 or 5 seconds slow, it's mind-boggling.
Well, they were 4 or 5 seconds slow on purpose so they could finish the race. Honda wasn't racing.
Yeah, but if they're complaining about weather in Melbourne, wait till they go to Japan.
Well, I know. I mean, and once again, in Malaysia, there won't be any racing from Honda. Honda is going to be the manner of walking. They're going to be testing all season. They've dialed the engine down so far just to make sure they can get through the race and watch that data and see where they can improve. I still think they're waiting for that seal to blow up again.
You know, Gerhard Berger made an interesting comment, and he has worked with these people at McLaren. He made a statement that if there is one company that can topple Mercedes, it's Honda.
And it will happen.
Yeah. You know, one thing about Red Bull doing their own engine, I'll tell you one thing that has been reported many times, and I know Red Bull has very strong links with the Volkswagen group, and I will not be surprised if, you know, Volkswagen owns Porsche and Audi, that if they announced sooner or later that Audi is coming into Formula One. I mean, they've won Le Mans so many times, it's now they're just wasting their own time racing there. So I will not be surprised if one of the VW group of companies comes into Formula One.
You mean as an engine supplier?
Si, senor.
I don't think that's going to happen under these rules. These rules are very restrictive for engine builders. It's stinko. Trust me. These rules are going to change very, very fast. But I think Renault is a bit subdued about investing too much time in this season's engine and waiting for the rules to change when they up the budget and develop something that's going to be race winning. I don't know. I'm confused. Maybe because Fernando wasn't in Australia that I'm all fuzzy in the brain.
Now, what will you do if Renault comes back into Formula One as a manufacturer of both the car and the engine, and Nando is on the opposing side? Who will you root for?
I will root for Renault to hire Fernando.
Ah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Oh, will we see Flavio back in the Renault pit?
Bravo, Fisico. Yep. No, unfortunately, you can never go back home, Nasser.
Yeah, in some cases, you cannot.
But in other cases, third time's a charm.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Quickly, I want to mention Richard Irish. He passed away March 19th. A lot of people don't know who this man is. He was a sports car driver in the 50s. Fascinating career, sort of self-made. It was interesting. In 52, he drove a Ferrari, 4.5-liter Ferrari belonging to Marty Christensen, and he beat Walt Hankson in a C-Type Jaguar in the rain at Watkins Glen in 54. He was a member of the Road Racing Drivers Club and a life member of the Sports Car Club of America, and he was friends with Enzo Ferrari. And Enzo allowed him to watch the building of the 275 GTB at the factory, which very few people got to see because it was very secretive. So there you have it. Richard Irish gone at 85. There you have it, Nasser. So we've got a special report from
Albert Park.
Albert Park. Yes. The Fernando Free Zone, as they called it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, sir.
Yep. JB from the forum, also known as Jason Bentley. Roll this in for us.
Yes, sir. He's known on the forum as the original JB, and I thank him very much for taking the time to chat with us. And I hope people enjoy this conversation. Please do enjoy this chat with Mr. Jason Bentley. Okay, folks, it's time now for our Aussie goodie bag. And all the way from Australia, we welcome the original JB. Jason, good to have you here. How are you, sir?
G'day, Nasir. I'm really well, thank you.
And what was the high point of you at the Grand Prix?
To be honest, it's the organisation of that Grand Prix. The drivers say it's the best one they attend, and I'm sure they say that for lots of cities, but you really see how much more relaxed the drivers are compared to when they're at other paddocks around the world, whether that's because it's the start of the season and they're just happy to be back in their cars, or whether they genuinely enjoy it, who knows. But it really is a great atmosphere down in Melbourne each year.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you this thing. Some years ago, I interviewed Dr. Mario Tyson. I'm sure you will remember him as
yes.
head of BMW Motorsports. And I asked
yes.
him, what are your favorite cities to go to? And he said Melbourne and Montreal.
I think for the same reasons, that they're so close to the city that it's so easy to get from the city to the track each day. It literally takes me, when the race is finished and the interviews are done on the podium, from the time I leave my grandstand to the time I'm in the heart of the city is never more than 45 minutes.
Wow.
And for a crowd of over 100,000 people, it's just amazing what they're able to do down in Melbourne.
Okay.
So it's, there's no problems with going to Melbourne. It's not a great event with consequences of disorganisation or big distances. It really is a great event.
Great. And I'm hoping very much to experience this town and the race and meeting you and other familiar members next year.
Yeah, that'd be great to catch up next year. It really is a simple place to get around. It's simple to get to the track, and there's some really good general admission areas that people, I spoke to people who have had grandstands and they've found places that they think are better than general admission. So each to their own, but look, you won't have a bad experience, I can guarantee it.
Yeah, you know, I can say the same thing about this new track we have in Austin. I mean, if you just get a general admission, you get to see a lot of action from different viewpoints. Okay, before
when Austin first opened, the Australian V8 supercars went over there and raced, and I didn't really have any interest in going there because, from my view, I thought it had no character or history. But one race in, and it's an awesome track in Austin, and same thing, such a great city. So it's definitely on the bag of or my list to put in the goodie bag for sure.
And Texas, they have the best steak anywhere in the world, let me tell you that.
And you know Australians love steak as well. We're a big country with plenty of land, so steak is our that's our national meat. So be good to come over and compare and contrast.
Okay. Now, before we talk more about the Grand Prix opening race of the season in your home and your town, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get interested in motor racing, please?
I've been interested on and off in motor racing since I was a kid. The town I grew up in, at one stage it was credited for being the birthplace of speedway motorcycle racing on a dirt track at our local, you call them fairgrounds, we call them showgrounds. So knowing about that history in that town, that got me interested. And then there was another speedway where the Tin Tops raced on speedway that was close by. So as kids, we used to go out there and watch that on weekends. And it was big in the 70s. So that got me interested. And, of course, the Bathurst race, the big Bathurst V8 supercar race. We used to watch that. It was on a long weekend. So that's how I got interested in that. Formula One wasn't so big. But then Alan Jones came along. The Adelaide race came along. And interest sort of started from there, I guess, and then on and off through the years came and went. And then finally when Webber, combination of two things, Webber started driving, so the coverage in Australia improved, and also a colleague that I worked with, he was a huge F1 fan, and I got on board with F1 big time from then. And a little bit of V8, Australian V8 history as well. One thing for like people that are new fans that I sort of recommend is a friend of mine was a mechanic in one of the V8 teams, and he used to have a local racing magazine delivered each week, and that had all categories from around the world. The more you read, the more you learn, I'm sure the more you love all forms of motor racing, and that's what happened, and now Formula One's at the top of the list.
Yeah, talking of all forms of motorsports, you folks had a great rider in Casey Stoner in MotoGP. Is that something you also follow?
Yeah, same thing. I think Australians are a little bit picky about what they choose. If there's none of their homeboys in the sport, they don't seem to follow it too closely. And when Casey was on the peak, there was a huge amount of interest. There's a new guy starting in the series this year, so hopefully he'll step up to the plate. He'll revive some interest. And, of course, Phillip Island's one of the world's greatest tracks. I've never been, but it's just a super track. So a combination of things keep people interested throughout the season.
How far is Phillip Island from Melbourne?
It's about an hour, and you can do it by bus. They run shuttle buses. And I can imagine the atmosphere on those buses from Melbourne down to Phillip Island each morning and each afternoon. It's very remote in terms of the amount of accommodation down there, but I'd be happy to stay in Melbourne and travel down. You meet people. Best things about each of those meetings, either Phillip Island or the Grand Prix, when you're sitting on the tram or the train or a bus, you just meet people from literally all around the world, and everybody's got a great story, whether it be the category they're going to watch or some other category that they've been to over the years. So, yeah, I recommend it. It's at the end of Australia. It's freezing cold down there sometimes, but it's an awesome, awesome track.
Yeah, that's certainly a place I want to go when I come to Melbourne, and hopefully.
Yeah, and there's different activities down there. The week before the Grand Prix, there's always a heritage demonstration weekend. There's a little bit of racing, but it's generally to give cars a run. And there's each year different manufacturers, Audi, Porsche, Merck, will bring some of their cars out of their museums to give them a run. So if you can stretch the time down here, you'll get a double whammy. You'll have some historics at Formula One the weekend before, and then the Formula One race the weekend afterwards. So that'll pretty much tick all your boxes in the space of 8 days.
Okay. You mentioned Adelaide. Did you ever go to the Grand Prix there?
No, I never did. It finished 20 years ago. I was still a schoolboy. No, it wasn't. 20 years ago, that was 96. No, so the last race was in 96. No, I didn't make it then. I was had little baby children at that stage, so I missed out. But no, so many people that have been over there, and same thing. It was a really good track. in the middle of a city, and it was the glory days in terms of the racing, the rivalries and the cars, the sounds and sights of the cars.
Yes, and as soon as this race finished this year, I read these reports that Sydney is trying to take the Grand Prix away from Melbourne. What can you tell us about that?
I'll just say this, that in 3 weeks' time, there's an election for the state government that represents Sydney, so you can work out why that comment was made by one side of politics.
Ah, so you think the race will stay in your town?
Yeah, in Melbourne, absolutely. There's no way you can go to Sydney. There's no infrastructure in Sydney to hold a race. They don't have a parkland setting like Adelaide or Melbourne have. It's physically impossible. When Weber drove for Williams, he took a Formula One car across the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Right.
And it was set up as high as possible because of the expansion joints in the bridge. So any idea of racing over the bridge isn't going to happen, and Sydney would be crippled if that was if that bridge was shut down, because it divides the harbour divides the city, and there's only a few crossings, and it certainly can't live without 8 lanes of traffic going over it each day. So yeah, don't hold out waiting for a Sydney Grand Prix. I don't think either of us will live to see it.
Okay, now you mentioned about being able to see the drivers closely. People who buy general admission tickets, are they able to go and maybe talk to one of the drivers or?
Yeah, absolutely. This year was the first year that general admission were given access to drivers in such close proximity. Some drivers would bunny hop their way along the line, depending on what they had on for that morning. Others would take a lot of time. Some of the team principals were there for 45 minutes taking photos with the fans, and it's a long area. It's about 300 feet they have to walk, so there's plenty of space. It's under the trees. You're in the shade. So if you wait there from the time the gates open until the cars are on track, it was just amazing to see that they'd convinced the teams to take part in it, because it certainly took up a fair bit of the time for the drivers and the senior members in the team.
Now, is Daniel Ricciardo the most popular Aussie sportsman right now?
On the international stage, without a doubt. And in terms of drivers, he's probably the most popular driver in any category we've had as well. So Mark Webber, for all his talk of being, you know, a straight shooter when he talks, the guy hasn't got much personality, unfortunately. Alan James is the same. Casey Stoner didn't like the media very much. He said he was very shy, so he never had much to do with the fans, whereas that smile of Daniel Ricciardo's is 100% genuine. And man, just the Red Bull caps in the crowd this year was unbelievable. Just the amount of support he's got was certainly a reason. I think ticket sales were up something like 15% this year, so if it's true, it's the Ricciardo factor without any doubt.
How much are the tickets for the Australian Grand Prix?
The most expensive ticket you can buy, which is a 4-day pass in an undercovered grandstand, is about $400 for 4 days. Wow. The event starts the day before. Yeah, so GA, if you buy early, you're probably looking, guessing maybe $100, $120 for a 4-day pass.
Really?
Yeah, like they really encourage you to buy early. But on the day, on race day, probably say $75, I guess, for race day for a general admission.
Wow. Okay, now tell us about a few. One thing I want to ask you about is, obviously, for me, the main attraction of motor racing always was and always will be the sound of a racing engine. What is your take on the sound we have now?
This year, I think you went to testing, right? This year, I think it was a little louder than last year. The photos I take of the cars on track, I think it's around turn 12. Last year, you could hear the tyres like biting into the road. It was that quiet that you could actually hear the tyres working on the car. This year, I didn't notice that so much. Yeah, compared to the V10 and the V8 days, they're seriously quiet. The V8 supercars and the Porsche Carrera Cup cars are genuinely louder than the Formula One cars. And yeah, pinnacle of motorsport, not in terms of that punch in the chest you used to get at the start of the race. And equally, Melbourne's it's a city track, and it was pretty special to be in town or in the city 5 miles away, and you could hear the cars out on track. I don't think you get that experience anymore. So, yeah, look, Formula E's there. I think that's where you go if you want to be able to go without earplugs. I was in the pits for the pit walk on the Thursday, and they started up Hamilton's car, and nobody had their hands to their ears out in the pits. Whereas back in the day with the V8s, if you were across the road from the pits, sitting in the grandstand, there's no way you could sit there with that motor going without your ears covered. So it's such an exponential drop in sound. So each to their own, but it was the sound that was appealing the first time I went. You just couldn't believe it the first time you went and heard the V8s. So it's a bit of a disappointment, but the historics will always be there. So if you need your fix, find your local club who run historic cars and get down and listen to them.
Yeah. Now, what was your first Grand Prix that you went to?
Melbourne's the only Grand Prix I've been to. So 2008 I went. Hamilton made it on the top step that year, I'm pretty sure. He did. So
yeah.
It was Hamilton and both of one of the Sauers, I think, that year, and a Williams. So, yeah, 2008 was the first one. And that year you can do another interesting thing they do in Melbourne. I don't know if they do it everywhere, is you can get for each day you can get a different grandstand. You can get a combination of grandstands, so you can – They're set grandstands, but you can sit at a different corner for each of the days. So I did that the first year I went, just to have a look around, and then I've settled on a grandstand in the straight ever since.
Now, when you did this pit walk, did you get to meet any of the team personnel or drivers?
No, when you do the pit walk, it's a bit of a crush. There's so many people, but you're up against the garage. You can see right inside. You see it all. So to be that close, to see the how sterile that environment is, it's just absolutely amazing. It's not like any other category at all. It's just unbelievable. It's like looking in the best laboratories of the world.
Now, in your opinion, what was the best looking Formula One car?
Oh, this year it's hard to go past that the Williams Minardi stripes. I don't know whether that's because the historical aspect of it two great brands being together, a great marketing style with a great mark of the Williams, but they just look good. They look good on the track this year.
Yeah, it's an iconic color scheme. Now, there was this big drama before the race, Guido van der Garde and Sauber. What was the local media talking about it?
Yeah, I was so surprised that it was probably the second story on all the mainstream news TV news services, second or third story each night was where the Sauber case was up to in court. I thought it would just fly under the radar, that it would have no influence. But, yeah, the Melbourne media, I don't know whether it was a slow news week in Melbourne politics, but it got big coverage down in Melbourne. And the way the newsreaders and the journalists were talking about it, wasn't doing a great favour to Formula One. It seemed like it was – they made out that it was, you know, rich boys. They've thrown the rattle out of the pram, so to speak. So, it wasn't great for the sport. So, but I was really surprised how much coverage it got.
And you were – judging from your wonderful collection of photos you posted, you were quite impressed by Mrs. Wolf, right?
Ah, yes. And you know what? On top of everything else, she's such a great girl. She just was really warm with the crowd. She was happy to get her photos taken with people, signed everything that was put in front of her. She spent a lot of time with the fans. So really good sense of humour, really down to earth. So, you can't take anything away from her. She's the complete package. But we'll see how she goes when it comes time to get into the car again. Was disappointing, though, that she didn't get a drive on Sunday, but obviously there are other reasons for that.
Now, over the years you've been following, are you one of those fans that you have a team or a driver that you support, or you just watch and enjoy?
I'm a watcher and an enjoyer, and I like to see the good guys have a go. Australian culture is a little bit of we support the underdog, so you get behind the guys who are in there having a go. But it's always good to see cream rise to the top, and certainly with it's good to see what's happened with Williams recently. I think Frank Williams deserved what's come his way. And in terms of drivers, we've had Weber and then Ricardo, so that just makes it easier to stay on board with the local boys.
Any favourite drivers since you've been following Formula One that who impressed you most?
Without a doubt, Nando's got to be the standout driver, I think. Others have got their flashes of brilliance. I'm impressed with how Nico's come along, but whether or not he's got enough to take it up and get past Hamilton this year, we'll see. But year in, year out, without a doubt, Nando's been there. It's a shame he wasn't at Melbourne this year, but as it turned out, I don't think even his magic would have been enough to break what could have happened with the McLarens this year.
Yeah, they were really lost, really lost, unfortunately.
You know, to watch Ron Dennis walk into the paddock, he walked along that fan walk, which in the past has been much smaller. He didn't have such a big crowd to contend with. But to his credit, he would always come over and sign a few things for the fans. This year, he absolutely avoided the crowds. Jenson Button looked less happy than he was this time last year. And considering what happened, the state of mind he was in last year after losing his dad, I think that gives you an indication of how serious things are at McLaren, and sadly, how serious they know things are at McLaren. So they've got a huge mountain to climb.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, there has never been a boring motor race. And a lot of people on different, websites are posting that this was a real boring race. Did you see it that way?
I had the F1 live timing app with me. It was disappointing not to see any overtaking. It was, cars were spread out. But just, for me, Formula One is not about what's on the track. It's also that strategy and watching the drivers trying to close that gap, knowing that by the end of the race they're going to be in a position to attack. So using the live timing app, if you've got access to that and you can see what the gaps are, there's enough in there to keep you interested. I was at the track and I was still interested. So if you're at home and got access to a little more technology, I found it enough to keep me interested, but I think for the average punter, if they were in two minds about whether to go or not next year, I don't think this year would have helped them out too much. But I'm a bit of a diehard. I'm happy when a weekend with a Formula One race is far better than a weekend when they're not racing.
Yes. Okay. Now, last year, tell me honestly, not being a Aussie but just a racing fan, were you surprised that Sebastian Vettel did not win a race and Daniel Ricciardo got three wins?
Yeah, all bias aside, to go from world champion to not getting anywhere close to your teammate who's new to the team and new car aside, I don't know how you explain it. I get that cars, I understand that cars are built around drivers, but for all his raw talent, for what he'd done before he got to Formula One, for what he did when he was with Toro Rosso, I just can't understand how Vettel couldn't crack a race last year. Danny Boy was, he came into Formula One that some of the Australian drivers that knew him growing up said he's the world's nicest kid, but he just hasn't got the mongrel to take it up and fight hard with the boys. Well, some of the moves that Ricardo did on the big boys last year around the outside on some of those corners, he's got titanium ones built in, that's for sure. And I don't know how Vettel lost the plot last year. It'll be one of those modern motor racing mysteries, I think.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I was like shocked, to go against a four-time world champion, a team built around him, car built around him. It was just like absolutely mind-boggling. So what do you see happening this season in terms of a championship run?
Well, there's Mercedes and then there's Daylight. It's good to see the Ferraris come back. I don't like to see any team flounder and where they are. It was interesting to see how fast the complaining started from the other teams after the race regarding the Mercedes domination. I think it'll be a battle realistically with the way the podium was set and the top three teams between the Mercedes teams and Ferrari, the Mercedes powered teams and Ferrari, I think, have got big work to do, and Honda have got even more work to do. So, Dr. Marco certainly put the blame for their performance at the feet of Renault. So there's only so much the engineers can do within the team. It's then up to the power producers to produce the power.
Talking of engineering, are you into the technology side, the technical side of motorsports, or like me.
Yeah, I am. And it's certainly getting – it's more complicated than ever, and each year that's why it's called development. It becomes more complicated each year. But I just hope it doesn't become too complicated, because for someone who's followed it for say you followed Formula One for 10 years, you've seen the year. It was easy to pick up 10 years ago and follow the development. I think for new fans to come straight in now, it's so complicated, the drivetrains and the power units, that it's a lot of technology to try and understand at the very beginning. So maybe that's, you know, I kind of think that may not be a great thing either, until it becomes, those technologies become mainstream in other categories or on road cars.
And for those who come to Melbourne, what grandstand, what part of the track you would recommend to watch the race from?
Do you know, for people that come to Melbourne, I would say definitely think about it, in all honesty, think about a general admission ticket. There are the freedom to move around so many parts of the track. There's not too many parts of the track that are completely inaccessible. The centre of the racetrack's a golf course, so they've got mounds built up as hazards for the golf course that are then great vantage points to be able to watch the race. Across the back of the circuit, the chicanes across the back, that you get some good action over the back. And now that the cars are quieter, you really do hear how hard the tyres are working. So it depends on your thing. If you want to see the cars moving across the back of the circuit, if you like to see what's happening in the pits and see what's happening in the garage, see what's happening on that main straight, go for one of the grandstands at the front. But in all honesty, I thought the general admission tickets were a disadvantage, but after having a really good look this year, I wouldn't discourage anybody from going general admission.
And how is the access on race day and Saturday to going to the track? Do you run into three-hour traffic jams, or how does it work?
No. From the centre of the city, Melbourne is a city that's pretty much operated all by trams. So trams crisscross the city. You get a tram to a central train station, and that's in the heart of the city. There's express trams then from that train station directly to the track, and you might wait maybe 5 or 10 minutes for a tram, and then it's a 10-minute, 15-minute tram ride, and then you just line up to go in. You have a bag search like you do everywhere. In all honesty, 45 minutes from the heart of the city into the to when you're standing on the track, and maybe add another 10 minutes at the end of the race. It's just so efficient. There's so many entry and exit points all around the track. There's trams at different places on the outside of the track, so that's why they're able to get so many people in and out so easily.
Is Alan Jones from Melbourne?
Do you know, I think he is not. I think he's a Sydney boy, because he always gives a spiel for the local free-to-air TV station that hosts the F1 races, and I know that's done in Sydney, so I'm pretty sure he's a local boy from Sydney.
Oh, okay.
So he's not. Yeah, I'm sure he's not from Melbourne. So anyway, actually, for a while I think he lived on the Gold Coast, which is, you know, like a bit of a, you know, it's the Miami of Australia. So I don't know whether he was flying down to Sydney to do for his TV commitments, but I know for a long while he was living on the Gold Coast, but I'm not too sure where he is now.
Have you ever met any of the Aussie drivers?
No, I've never really talked too much in terms of, like, the local V8 drivers, a lot of them have been overseas and had a go in open wheelers, tried to make their mark in open wheelers over the years when they were younger. And then, yeah, for whatever reason, budget or talent, they end up back in Australia. So there's so many guys that race, so many Australian drivers over here that race in local series, who will all tell you about former teammates that they had in their junior days who are now racing in F1. So the motor racing legacy, I guess, in Australia is pretty big. Yeah, a lot of so many, you know, for such a small population, we've certainly had a lot of guys go to Europe and try and make their mark over there.
Yeah, and talking of legacy, Jack Brabham passed away not too long ago. Was his passing a big news in Australian media?
Do you know, of all the places to be when that happened, I was in Tibet in China. I was on a tour group, and I found out about it through somebody else. Somebody told me, and it was big news. But I was surprised he didn't have a state funeral. He had a local funeral, like a family funeral, and it wasn't as big as what I expected it would be. But I think that's more a mark of Jack Brabham, that he was happy to be out of the limelight. He was just happy to be stand for what he'd done. He ticked all the boxes. and he was just happy to be on the sidelines and let the others take their turn at being in the spotlight. So, yeah, it was a bit of a sad day. In addition to being in Tibet, I might have written this on the forum when he passed away, is there are a couple of guys travelling in the group I was in, and they, three guys from Australia, they met each other in London at the end of the 60s. They went over there working as young guys and met each other, and they decided to go on a tour 45 years later and decided they'd go to China. And they saw me wearing, one of them saw me wearing my Ricardo cap and started talking to me about Formula One. And this guy said to me, you know, in 1970, I was standing on the last corner at Monaco watching Jack Brabham winning the race until he got to the very last corner. He said, I was standing on that corner and saw Jack just go straight ahead when he got on the dirty part of the track. And he told me that story, and then 2 days later he passed away. So, yeah, I'll certainly remember where I was when I heard that news.
No, the contribution to motor racing, Formula One from Australia and New Zealand, very, very impressive.
Yeah, and New Zealand today, the population in New Zealand's probably 5 or 6 million. It's a tiny, tiny population. So back in the 60s, maybe 2 million population. To have Bruce McLaren and Denny Hulme, guys like that come out of there during the 60s, just amazing what they could do. And so far from Europe, that's it. You've got to remember we're 10,000 miles away from Europe. Easier to get to now. It's easier to get the freight around the world with the cargo planes we've got today. But back in the day, those guys achieved, they were punching above their weight, that's for sure.
You know, some years ago, Clark and I, we went to Laguna Seca. There was this big event there. And it was just a great day for us to go and shake hands and do a brief interview with Jack Brabham. I will never forget that.
Yeah, he's such a beautiful man. I met him in 2009 at a V8 supercar race. He was there signing autographs at a card table. He was just sitting there quietly on his own. I didn't try and speak to him. I knew he was, he was essentially totally deaf. He'd always have somebody with him to act as interpreter, pretty much, that you'd talk to a person and they'd basically scream into his ears. So he was certainly on the downhill run in terms of his hearing when I saw him. But, Gentleman Jack, that's what his nickname was here. And, he's just good to see an old school guy, just make it so far.
Now, the Australian Grand Prix has the Australian V8 as a support race. Are there other races also, like the Porsche Cup or Formula Ford?
They have Porsche Cup, so that's a local. There's a local series of the Porsche Carrera Cup that follows. They follow the V8s as well. The V8s race, there's some historic cars, so some historic V8s from back in the day that race. There's a couple of different categories of those. There's no other open wheelers at this stage. I know they're trying to really push to get some GP2, to get around of the GP2 here, so hopefully that comes off. It'd be good to see the young guys come, make it a bit further south. And then there's on-track demonstrations. A lot of historic cars, like a lot of vintage race cars, make it out onto track. They have a demonstration. There's pretty much only 10 or 15 minutes between something being on track. If you want to watch everything on the track, you're not going to leave your seat. You'll be there for the day. And that's across all 4 days because it starts on the Thursday with different entertainment. And then there's also a Formula One and road car and race car comparison. And it's a handicap event, just a one-lap race just to see who can beat who. This year they were using one of the Minardi twin-seaters, but in the past they used one of the old Red Bull cars or an old McLaren, which is handy to hear. I think they deliberately don't use them anymore because people realised how much better they sounded than the current cars.
Talking of Minardi, where is Mr. Paul Stoddart these days?
I don't know. He pops up now and again on telecasts. You'll see him at different races around the world. He was always based in Europe. He's when he had his businesses happening when he owned Minardi, he was European based then. So I haven't seen him in Australia walking around, so I don't know whether he makes it out to the race each year, but based on when you see him on telecast from time to time on the grid in some of the European races, I assume he's still making his fortune in Europe.
Now, I see you wearing this wonderful F1 Weekly cap. How did you discover this podcast?
Same in 2000 and... 2009, I got my first iPod, I think. My kids bought me an iPod. And I didn't know too much about what podcasts were. And literally, I typed in, when I looked up podcast, the first thing I typed in was F1. And the first thing that came up was F1 Weekly. So I think it was destiny, Nasir. It's the only way I can describe it.
JB, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now here's 50 words on the Australian Grand Prix. Leon Bray says, 'Twas a tad boring. One off sick before the start, one off sick after practice, two failures on the warm-up, and a real procession after Maldonado does his usual crash, with help from Kimi and Sauber. Even the Cablamos lacked any entertainment. Sauber surprised everyone. The Red Bull got lapped, but at least Jensen was only lapped twice. Dr. Mark F. Leon Bray says most of it, but I'd add that new boys, Nasser, Sainz, and Verstappen, did really well. Sauber did a lot better than expected. At least JB finished. And the Governator needs to become a regular fixture on the podium. I hope Nico can take it to Lewis. Neon Zapper writes, with the exception of three teams, the rest of the grid was not ready for prime time. I thought Lewis was shorter. Yay! 5 a.m. and I really didn't need this. Not at all. Cars dropping out, the only racing happening well back, and Mercedes in cruise mode. Raythump, continued Mercedes domination. Some good racing behind the leaders with rookies showing very well. Looks like Ferrari is heading in the right direction with the power unit. Renault, not so much. Koala, boring. The race was a farce, and this season could easily turn into a farce. Costs need to be contained, but the lack of freedom to develop cars and engines is clearly impacting on the ability for teams to field reliable and competitive cars. Lewis writes, easy win for Lewis and promise of a good season for Ferrari. Well, hopefully, or public interest in this series will be even less, Mercedes will run away with this championship, and our hope is that the fight between Lewis and Nico will intensify again. If not, this is going to be one boring F1 season. Original JB writes, a return of the Ferrari livery to Schumacher Red saw a return to the Schumacher era of cars not finishing, cars not overtaking, and the average fans losing the passion. If everything old is new again, give me the engine noise. And why was I denied the joy of seeing Susie Wolf on the grid, or at least starting from the pit lane? There you go. Another outstanding job from the forum.
I want to thank the listeners. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.